Wow. Wake up, everybody, and welcome to You Get the Blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell.
I'm Bob Belts.
And we're here to bless you with some of the greatest music you've ever heard and a guest that we know will inspire you. So you've tuned in to the right show this morning. Enjoy this music. My favorite sport, by the way. Frank and Nancy are in bed drinking coffee, listening to this. Put me in, coach.
Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play
today. We may just play this three or four times. Well, welcome, everybody. Do you get the blessing? We do play strange music coming in and going out, but we hope it wakes you up and helps you know that we don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the Lord Jesus Christ seriously. And Bob, you had a
little
good week.
Delayed tribute to the World Series now that baseball season's over, huh?
Oh, I hate that when it's over. But that was a good series. Yeah. So each week on this program, we introduce you to guests that we think are doing amazing things with their lives, inspirational, good for this community and around the world. And Dan Hettinger's our guest today. And Dan, I've known for maybe a year or two, maybe longer than that, but he's a pastor, he's an author. And we're looking forward to hearing from Dan today. So welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. I like the song. I like baseball, too. I grew up in the home of the Little League World Series, so I just kind of grew up liking baseball.
You did? Williamsport?
Williamsport, Pennsylvania, my hometown. My folks lived there until they died just a couple of years ago. When I do crowdbreaker questions, I usually tell people I've attended more World Series games than the average person, and they think that means Major League World Series, but I attended a lot of the Little League World Series games. Did that with my brother a lot of times.
I got to know Steve Keener. I don't know if he's still the president of the Little League, but he's a great guy, and we did a big project with one of Bob's friends, Mark Lundeen, who's an incredible artist.
Sculptor.
Sculptor did this huge Mighty Casey 14-foot tall bronze baseball player, and we permanently erected it over the left field fence there at the main stadium in Williamsport, and Steve Keener was a big help getting that done.
Howard J. Lomedy Stadium, you erected it there? No kidding.
I there are two, but whatever the big main one was.
That's Howard J. Lomedy. That's the big one. That's one that's been around a long time.
And who is that?
He was one of the original guys in Williamsport that got Little League started. And as a kid, I played on the very first Little League baseball field. The very first one.
You're not that old. What do you mean, the very first one?
The very first one.
And, where? You know,
in Williamsport, it's now called Original Little League Field.
That's
the name
God.
Of it, Original. And kind of like the other the baseball parks they have there now, outfield had a great big hill, and it was the dike to, I think, the Susquehanna River or like Cumming Creek, and there'd be people that sit on the dike and watch the Little League games. It's incredible. It was fun to sit and watch a Little League game with a crowd of 40,000.
Yeah, really?
You know? It's not your average Little League baseball when you make it to Williamsport.
And what was your story with Mark Lundeen? How are you connected?
He was a junior high kid when I was a youth pastor in a little town in Nebraska, and his sister Carol was in the group. She was a high school student, and Mark was junior high and used to come to some of the junior high stuff. So I've known him since he was a little kid, and I haven't seen him in many years. You've gotten to be, you know, better friends with him, but he's become, and his brother, of course, was a sculptor before he was. They're both world, you know, renowned sculptors, and both live up in Loveland, I think.
Yeah, George is a great guy. I know Mark better. Yeah. Did a project with Mark, and 30 Major League Baseball players participated. But so why the love of baseball, Dan?
Well, you know, as a kid, I grew up just enjoying it. My brother and I went to tons of minor league games in the oldest ballpark in the second oldest minor league ballpark in the country, Bowman Field there in Williamsport, and I just liked it. I played it as a kid, and maybe it was because it was in the summer, and so even today, I didn't get to go to a major league game till I was out of college, and so even today, just to go to the ballpark, I'm not one of those guys that remembers every statistic and every name and every historical fact. I just love the experience of going to the ballpark and watching the game. And the huge expanse of the outfield fence and the whole thing. It's just a great experience for me. And then, you know, about 20 years ago, I got to be friends with a Major League Baseball player and started delving into some of his experiences and stories, and I've just kind of kept with my love of the game.
Tell us about that friend.
Well, that guy's name is Daryl Chaney, and Daryl and I had a couple of things in common off the baseball field. One was our love for the Lord, but the other thing was we neither one of us felt very successful. And when I was talking to Daryl, I go, Daryl, how can you not feel very successful about being a baseball player? First of all, I thought it was cool just to know a baseball player personally. I mean, these guys are always kind of bigger than life, and I was just thrilled to have a few autographed baseballs in my study. And now here I get to hang out every week doing a Bible study with a real big league ball player. He played 7 years with the Cincinnati Reds.
Was a phenomenal player. Actually, anybody who plays one day in the major leagues is a phenomenal athlete.
He played 11 years in the major leagues, 7 years with the Big Red Machine. His teammates were Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, Davey Concepcion, Tony Perez, those guys. They were his teammates. Sparky Anderson was his manager.
Won a few world championships.
He played in three World Series, four National League Championship Series, and he won one World Series. That very famous Game 6 in Fenway Park, maybe a little bit more famous than the more recent one. He played in that game, you know, the one where Carlton Fisk was waving the ball fair. Daryl was in that game. He batted against Louis Tiant, flied out to Carl Yastrzemski in the outfield.
He just said he doesn't remember names and statistics.
Well,
he's rattling them off pretty quickly here.
I remembered that one, but here's what Daryl and I had in common. He didn't particularly feel successful. Huh. And I would talk to him. I'd go, how can you not feel successful? What you did was so cool. I would have loved to have just had the worst seat in the stadium to see that game, and you were actually in the game. And there's a whole bunch of other statistics. But the thing of it was, he compared his life with the other guys. And he was the utility player among superstars. And, Bo, like you said a couple of minutes ago, if you make it to that level, you're already a super athlete. And so he didn't make it to that level to be the utility player. When he was in high school, he was the parade high school All-American quarterback. And he wanted to be a superstar too. Well, when I went into ministry, I didn't go into ministry to be an average pastor of a small church. I went into ministry to be a superstar. I wanted to be the big guy, the latest and the greatest, you know, with the biggest church and the thing that was happening. And my whole ministry, I ended up having small churches. So one day I'm kind of busting Daryl's chops and going, come on, you know, you played in the big leagues. Well, look at what you did and look at all of this. And God kind of started breaking through to me. And he said, Dan, I called you. I died on the cross for you. Whoever said you had to have a big ministry to matter? And I used you. I've used you to reach people. I've used you in a variety of settings where Rick Warren or Bill Hybels or one of those big shots couldn't reach. Why don't you be happy where you are? And why don't you just bloom where you're planted and grow and enjoy it? That was kind of a breakthrough for me. And Daryl and I, as we kind of ventured down that path together, we both discovered some things. And he realized all the more how important his position was on the team. The Big Red Machine was partly the Big Red Machine because they had a great utility player that backed up Pete Rose and Joe Morgan and other guys. They had a guy that come in to play key plays when they needed to, and that's the way God used me too in the ministry.
And you know, I taken criticism with our group, Narrow Gate. You know, you ought to be doing this and this, and leadership ought to be more involved in growing this. And I don't know if it's age or just exactly what Dan's saying, but, you know, we just sort of celebrate, don't we, Bob, who comes. It's like we don't worry about who's not there and the numbers, whether it's Highline Community Church or Narrow Gate or Fresh Air, a lot of the different ministries we're involved with. It's sort of like, again, maybe it's to a certain age, you think, I am who I am, and that's okay, and the rest of y'all that are trying to project that on me can just kind of keep that to yourselves.
Well, and I think, you know, it is, I mean, our culture is always pounding away on that, and, you know, I can so relate to you because we've both been in ministry and a pastorate, and you'd probably most people would think, well, that kind of competition isn't there, and it's there just as much as almost in any other, you know, field. And I think about the national meetings when all the guys get together, it's always the guys with the big churches, you know, that are put up front, and you know, so there's a lot of that that goes on even in the Christian world, but so you fight it, got to fight it, you know.
There's a great book I read 40 years ago called Killing Giants, Pulling Thorns by Chuck Swindoll, and he says the thorn of comparison will bury you if you don't watch out for it.
And that's the problem that Daryl had. He compared himself with the first million-dollar player on his team, and I was comparing myself with everything. And, you know, Bob, like you said, I would go to pastors' conferences, and I promise almost every conference I ever went to, the only guy who spoke, the only people who spoke, men or women, were pastors or leaders in bigness. You know, it had to be the biggest, the latest, the greatest. Yeah. And I would sit there, and especially as a younger man, I would think, well, that's what I have to be in order to be significant. And then I would go back to my local church and my local setting, and I'd try to do what they said to do. I was trying to be somebody I wasn't, quite frankly, and it wouldn't work. And so then I would just get more and more discouraged, and then Satan would get on my shoulder, and he'd say, well, Dan, your ministry's no good. It must not matter. You're not making a difference in people's lives. And it's exactly what was happening in Daryl's life. And he was thinking, well, I'm not playing as much, and I'm not in the game as much. And where I attend church, Tom Melton has this saying, and I guess actually it's a Henry Nouwen saying, what's most personal is most universal. You know, if a big league ball player had this problem, and if a pastor of a small church had this problem, I figure probably a lot of guys have the same problem.
Undoubtedly, and even guys that are, you know, that we would, like your friend, we would tend to look at and just think, this is incredible. How could the guy feel like that?
Right.
You know, and I remember even reading about Ringo Starr one time, and he was talking about how that there was this point in time when he felt like, you know, none of the other guys liked the Beatles, you know, none of the other guys liked him, and he was just kind of insignificant. And you're thinking, well, you can't get more famous than that, you know,
right.
And yet still feeling like most of us feel most of the time, I think. So
I want to make the other point here too, though, that at some point in life too, I got really comfortable thinking I cannot think like Bob Belts. You are a lot smarter than I am, and you have a way with the Bible of presenting it better than I'm ever going to present it. So I can remember watching George Foster hit a ball at spring training when I was playing with the Cardinals, thinking I could stand here in this cage every day for 5 hours, and I am never once going to hit a baseball like he just hit that baseball. So some of it also is to say, I don't criticize Johnny Bench or Pete Rose or Bob Belts or Jim Dixon, some of the pastors I know that have big churches, because I think they are smarter than me. And I also am pretty comfortable sitting around thinking there are people doing a lot more with their lives than I'm doing. Like, I know what it took for me to write one little book, collection of my chapels services, and Belts, in spite of everything else he's doing, has written 15 books, And Bob Beal's written 25 books, and our friend Jerry Jenkins has written 400 books. So I guess I'm saying on the flip side of that, I don't criticize the guys that God almost has supernaturally touched and said, you know, you're going to be 5'10", 170 pounds, but somehow you're going to throw this fastball 95 miles an hour. There's nothing wrong with that. Go for it. Do it. And the fact that you can blow it by me is my problem, but I don't get snagged on it anymore either. In fact, there's a scripture, I'm quite sure this is Living Bible, that says to enjoy your work and accept your lot in life. This truly is a gift from God. So I think you learn your position on God's body of Christ and then go for it in that area and play it the best you can. But I don't know why God makes one church 5,000, one church 500, and one church 50. I guess that's not for me to figure out. But some of it is, I think, how good's the pastor? How hard does he work? So I don't see a conflict with being the fastest, strongest, best prepared businessman, athlete, or minister. That is not a conflict for me. In fact, I say go for it.
Well, and my point too, Bo, to that, I didn't even mean to be speaking against the big church. All I meant to say is that was the only thing I was hearing as significant, and that isn't the only significant thing. Every player on the team is important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes the smaller player is working just as hard and is just as smart but hasn't achieved the same kind of results because God has a different plan. One day I went out when I was in my first church and I was just a young guy, and I didn't know what I was doing. I do whatever anybody told me to do, and I took Evangelism Explosion by Dr. D. James Kennedy out of Coral Ridge Presbyterian, and I went out and shared the gospel with a lady at her house one noon, and lo and behold, in spite of me, she came to receive Christ, and then a few days later, her husband did, and I was in a small church, and nothing huge or big or great or fantastic seemed to be happening. And since I was measuring myself by everybody else, I was a little discouraged by that. And I moved on to another ministry and lost track of her for a short period of time. But she joined Child Evangelism Fellowship. And she started traveling. And I talked to her just a couple of weeks ago. She's in her mid-80s. And I was in Florida, and I wanted to go by and see her. And she said, I'd love to see you, Dan, but I can't because I'm going to be up ministering at a county fair in Georgia, mid-80s. She said, my husband and I have traveled to every state in the United States at county fairs sharing the gospel using the wordless book. And so I'll get this letter from her about once a quarter, and she'll say, was like to the Perry, Georgia for the state fair, and shared the gospel with 3,000 people, 1,200 came to receive Christ, so many adults, so many young people. Year after year after year, I'm guessing, this lady has led tens of thousands of people to the Lord. Now, I back up and I go, I was the guy who was called of the Lord to reach her that day. I was a utility player. I wasn't pastoring the big church. And again, I'm not talking against anybody. I thank the Lord for those flagship churches. And they have inspired me, and they have done a great service for the Lord. But I do sort of take the other side and say, I want to also affirm the guy in the trenches. I want to affirm the utility player. I want to affirm the man who doesn't feel like he's important because he's not Bo Mitchell or Bob Belts or Jim Dixon or Rick Warren or Bill Hybels or whoever, but he's just a guy in the trenches. And maybe he is a guy of more modest skills. Maybe he doesn't quite have the ability to memorize or to be quite as articulate, but doggone it, he's being used of God because God made him that way.
Absolutely.
God made him that way as much as he made Daryl Chaney to be a great utility player. And here's the other side of it too. If everybody was really comfortable with where they were and was confident in where they were, I think everybody would do a better job too. I would have enjoyed ministry more and probably done a better job if I'd have known that I was exactly where God wanted me to be, being who I was, and then and thinking that's good, you know, rather than wishing I was somebody else or somewhere else.
That's Highline is not a big church. I mean, it's, you know, we're 300 or 400. 400, we feel like we've got a lot of folks there on Sunday morning. So, you, of course, in terms of the size of churches around the world, that probably is big, you know, because our idea of our scope of looking at a 15,000 member church or something is not the norm. But honestly, had I, had I come out of Cherry Hills and immediately gone to Highline and it stayed at 300 or 400, I probably would have, you know, wanted to slice my throat because I was so hooked into that whole thing. And so it is nice. I actually feel very comfortable, you know, if Highline, while I'm there, never, you know, it's fun to see people come to Christ and new people come. But again, I'm pretty comfortable with not having a big church, you know. It's and I know that God's completely comfortable with that, mm-hmm. you know. And I think there is a sort of a degree of mystery, you know, in all that. But, you know, even the scriptures talk about, you know, when it talks about spiritual gifts in Corinthians, that the workings, I think, is the word that's translated. There's different gifts, you know, and then different ministries and then different workings, which seems to have some connection to outcomes, you know. So, you know, I think in all of our lives, the goal is to, you know, have a sense of what God's calling us to. And be our best, but leave the results to Him, which is really hard. But,
and that's the way we measure ourselves. Yeah. You know, we just measure ourselves by who He said we are, mm-hmm. and who He says we are. And you know, my book.
Let's talk about that.
Okay,
by the way.
All right.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, it's titled "Welcome to the Big Leagues: Every Man's Journey to Significance," but the theme is "Your Life Matters," and I just believe the Lord wants every person to know their life matters and that their place on the team, whether it's a big place or a little place, I think it's pretty scriptural, they matter. And if a person lived every day knowing how much they matter, then not just positive thinking, there's theology for that. Mm-hmm. God says they matter.
Sure.
He knew their name before the foundation of the world, and He's preparing a place for them in heaven now. So from eternity to eternity, He knows them. They matter. And if we lived every day with the confidence that our lives matter, then even every little thing would have potential. I love some of the metaphors of baseball. The one negative one, when a player comes up to bat, it is him against everybody else. And sometimes life feels that way. It feels like the whole world is competing to try to keep you from being successful. But the other metaphor I like even more than that is the shape of a baseball field. It all starts at 17 inches wide, home plate. Small space, little space. But the way first base goes out and third base goes out perpendicular, it makes a vast and eternal outfield with unlimited potential. And I think when a person knows their life matters, when they know they're significant, they feel like they've made it to the big leagues and what God's called them to do. And when they're there, even the little things they do, like leading one person to the Lord over lunch, has unlimited potential, like the shape of a baseball field. It's vast and unlimited. So I want to live every day believing that the least little thing I do matters to God.
That's an incredible ministry of encouragement God's given you. So you and Daryl go out speaking and sharing your book now together?
Every chance we can. And anywhere in the country, every chance we can. And we're being very well received. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke to His Love Fellowship down here in Denver. I showed up. There were 50 guys there. 40 of them were homeless. And I thought, well, what's the attention span of a homeless guy? And I looked them in the eye and I said, I want you guys to know one thing, your life matters. And they were with me for a half hour. And then I went and hopped on a plane and flew to Palm Beach County, Florida, and talked to a group of guys at the opposite end of the financial spectrum. And Daryl and I got a standing ovation. So I think people everywhere are eager to hear their lives matter. They've lived in a world that has measured their worth with false and earthly measurement systems. And when they hear who God says they are and how much their lives matter, it encourages them to live every day with a sense of expectancy.
And I had this cool basketball game one night for the University of Colorado at Creighton University, and I was shooting guard but averaged about 10 points a game. But that night I hit 9 straight from about 25 feet. I know that sounds exaggerated, but I can show you the article. The Creighton crowd started.
Is that the one you have framed and matted and hangs in your office?
16
on that,
by
that,
20.
That whole wall.
Yeah.
And, no,
but the Creighton crowd started cheering for me, and the 10th shot I hit, I couldn't believe the guy wasn't picking me up deeper. That was way out. But it was a perfect shot, hit the front rim, and it's like time froze, and the coach and I made eye contact, and the ball rolled out. So after 9 straight, he said to me, "Damn you for taking that shot." And I didn't know what was going on. I knew something supernatural was happening. I could feel it physically. But I heard this voice in my head say, "If you live for the approval of man, you will never be able to do enough." Mm-hmm. So I like your ministry of encouragement, telling everybody that you get to share this book with and your message with, you know, you're in the big leagues. If you're sold out for Christ and you're playing your role in the body of Christ, you're doing it. So go for it.
Right. Guys, get this online?
Amazon, Kindle,
okay.
Yep, or buy it directly from me. Our website is welcometothebigleagues.org, and we can directly fill orders too.
Great.
It's a good message, Dan, and you're a good guy. And you tell Daryl I remember him, and he was a phenomenal player.
He was a darn good ball player.
And a great guy.
He's a great guy. Great sense of humor. Excellent speaker. Good guy.
So thanks for being with us on You Get the Blessing today. And Dan, we wish you the best in your ministry.
Hey, thank you. And thanks for having me. It's been awesome to hang out with you guys.